Hi, please be seated at this time. Welcome. Partly I'll get you to seated because you won't be able to see me if you're not seated. I'm not super tall here. I know. I'm going to say it before Tony says it. My name is David Jung, and my incredible wife shared before me. So thank you so much, Erica, for preparing the way. My stock always increases when she's around. I am from Winnipeg, Canada. A lot of you know where that is. You like nature? Come on down in January. It might change your mind, sister. But thank you so much for your words as well of transformation and sharing. And in a special way, we've been to Ottawa a few times as we are here. You know Howard and Karen very well. I mean, we respect you and love you so much. Thanks so much for always being such a kind and wonderful host to us. And also little Eric, every year he grows up. He's 12 years old. He thinks he can change the world and everything. So I always show up and I honestly don't tell him, but I come up with a new video game we play together, but I've advanced so far that he can't catch me anymore. And so I just let him play it, and he's like, I'm gonna beat Uncle David. And he's at level one, I'm at the immortal level. And the next one is God tier, it almost seems wrong. And so as he grows in his skill, he might try to catch me, but one thing he doesn't have that I have, money. So I can buy a couple of things, and next thing you know, I'm on top again. But that's just too bad. That's just where you're at right now. Being 12 and 54, there are resources we have. And you know, as you get older, you can get smarter, and that's just the way we are. So one day when you watch this, Eric, you'll never win. But it keeps him humble. But it's so great to be here, especially with Tony and Melanie. We have known Tony and Melanie, I've known Tony for about 32 years. He took off 2 years. I'm not sure if it's trauma moments, he forgot about me. But he was actually part of my Bible studies. It was amazing just to see him sit down and study the Bible with me and help me become a disciple. And one of the things he did was he sat down and he joked around quite a bit. I'm sure you've never seen that. He studied the Bible, but yet through all that humor, it just helps the scriptures land a little bit better, because when you're cutting into someone's heart, you gotta joke a little bit to distract them from the pain. I remember sitting down studying the Bible, and then you know one of the amazing things was I remember Tony. This is the quintessential picture of Tony. I don't know if you can see that, but he just stands up and he's victorious wherever he goes. He's just like, "Yay, I win!" I own the lake or something. But that's Tony, right? But he just drove me home that day. It was kind of weird because I spent most of my life, I'll share a little bit about that, but not relying on anyone. And so when he offered to drive me home, you might think, why is that a big deal? Well, the way I grew up, you just don't help somebody without something. You need to pay somebody back. So when he drove me home, I was waiting for the other shoe to drop, you know? And so as he drove me home, dropped my house, and he, that was it. I know, you think you had a rough time studying the Bible. I just didn't trust anyone. But Tony is one of the first people I trusted, along with some of the other brothers that were studying the Bible. And it didn't take me, Erica's 2 years or whatever she ran away. I'm just better, I guess. No, it took me about 3 months. And so, but I became a disciple of Jesus Christ. And one of the coolest things to be able to become a disciple was that I was able to finally, to a certain degree at the time, because you don't heal all at once, is to start to trust. Yeah. Trust is a huge piece. I mean, there's other words for trust, right? It's faith. Right? And one of the things I was able to trust people a little more is because I was able to trust God. Yeah. And so as I was growing up, there are lessons that you learn when you're growing up, right? Some lessons are really great to learn. Some lessons are not good to learn. And you're a really quick learner in some of the, neuropsychology, you're about 24. People said it was 18, but they've advanced now. So about 24 and below, you can learn things very, very quickly. Languages, playing the drums, Our kids grew up during pandemic, and Gabriel just said, our younger son was like, yeah, I just learned how to play guitar. And when you just learned how to play guitar, what do you mean, right? He goes, well, I just watched the internet, YouTube, and I learned how. I was like, how did you do that? It's because, that neuroplasticity thing. He learned. At young ages, you learn many, many things. And some of those lessons stay with you. And because of some of my history, I'll share a little bit about it, was that I learned pretty much three big lessons in my life. And it really hindered my ability to trust God. And so part of that involved, my family of origin a little bit. My mom and dad, I love them to death. And if it wasn't because of Jesus, I would have no way to love them. I would have no way to deal with some of the pain. I remember a story about my family, and what would happen is with my dad, he was in a situation where my mom were kind of tricked a little bit to be married. My mom was way in Hong Kong. My dad had come to Toronto already, and a relative wanting my mom to have a better life and wanting my dad to have a better life basically told a very large lie to say that my dad was filthy rich. And then they told my dad my mom was filthy rich. Meanwhile, they just were not, right? And so they were kind of in love with other people. And I've shared this many times. They liked other people, but because of the good life in Canada, one of the sacrifices, you know, per se, my mom came here, found out that, I've been tricked. And my dad also found out, oh, no, I've been tricked. And that didn't start off the great. That's, I don't know about you, but it's not the best way to start off a marriage. And so part of having me, that I was still in my mom's belly and when I was about to be born, my dad was in New York and he was driving a cab. You know, he lived in Toronto, we went to New York. Immigration wasn't that big of a deal back then, you just walked cross border, whatever. Not like these days. He was working there as a cabbie. And one of the big things is he wasn't gonna come back. Like, he was just gonna stay there. You know, with you know, your first son being born. You know, that left an impression upon me. I mean, I didn't know at the time, but it really left a message of, you know, there's no one going to be there to help you. And that's a strong message to leave to someone. You know, I probably learned this around 6, 7 years old. And then I think my mom, you know, having gone through some of that, because my dad started enjoying the company of other women. He was just unhappy with his life. I mean, I love him very much now. He's not a disciple, but he played by his own rules of life, right? And he started, and my mom wasn't super excited about him, and not she wasn't the best to him, and obviously from that beginning of the story. And I remember being about 6 years old, one of my strongest childhood memories that I remembered, my mom helped us, you know, she just had my brother at the time, you know, not too long ago. I think she was going through some postpartum stuff, whatever was happening. And I remember being about 5 or 6 years old, it was around when I started school, in the middle of the night, I felt wet tears on my face, and they weren't mine. I was like, what's going on? You're waking up. And my life at, you know, 6 years old involved, like, you know, G.I. Joe and all that, you know, fun stuff like that, but it changed a little bit. Because my mom said, hey, listen, you need to take care of your brother and your sister. And I was like, why? What do you mean? I'm 6. But you don't know you're 6 when you're 6. You're just kind of like, what are you talking about? I don't have a job. Like, what's happening, right? I didn't have the confidence of an Eric that I can beat anybody. I was more like, what's happening? And I didn't realize at the time, right, but she was so sad and so depressed of all that was going on that she was contemplating suicidal ideations. She was thinking about going up to the roof and just jumping off. Right now, my aunt came. She's a woman of faith, right? She came and counseled them, or whatever. She kind of yelled at them and just got them together. And basically, they stayed together for the kids. So that was 6 years old for me. Another big lesson I learned: not only that you're not going to get any help from anybody because your dad's not going to come back and he's in New York. I was only recently in New York. I'll tell you, when I first worked with New York, that was the first memory of New York, not the bagels, not Times Square. It was like, my dad was here, and he was going to stay here. And those are memories, right? And New York's a better city now. I've had some food, and it's better now there, I remember. But my mom, the second lesson that I learned about my life was, hey, even if somebody's trying to help you, it's not going to be adequate. It's not going to be adequate. So really, no one to help you or people trying to help you, they can't do it. And so the big rule that I left for myself, I didn't realize this until, you know, I started doing some therapy and some clinical supervision for my own counseling work, was that, you know, David, you've learned not to trust. And your rule is this: trust no one. Follow no one. Don't do that. Because only people will burn you and let you down. And also, even if they try to help you, they're not going to be able to do it. Because they're inadequate to do that. And that's what's set up. And I'm thinking, none of you probably, you don't know what I'm talking about, but this is just my story, right? But this kind of builds this narrative of mine where this is me and my wife. We retired out of ministry, 32 years of ministry for me. And this was the retirement party for us in Winnipeg. That was December 31st. And all these people were sharing about the impact that we had made. Like, so many people, Tony and Melanie were part of that group, and it was from all around the globe, just sharing. thank you so much for 32s in ministry. Tony actually hired me. Bad move for you. But they sent us to Winnipeg. Yeah, back in the day, you didn't really, you know, hey, would you like to go? It's more like, hey, so which moving company you'd like to use? So there's a lot of stuff. And we went to Winnipeg, and, you know, it was great. But we had been there for 25 years. And one of the things standing on the stage was, how on earth did we get all these people to listen to us and not want to kill us after 25 years, right? Because our lifespans of ministers, sometimes, you know, after a certain point, like, ding, ding, you reach that point, uh-oh, you know, like people are sick of me. But after 25 years, the church was still going strong. We raised a great couple up, Rob and Katie Borgeson. But we just looked at all the people that we had impacted, and I was just like, this shouldn't be. Because for a man that grew up understanding that no one can help you, even if they tried to be inadequate, the only factor was Jesus. Because if I could trust Jesus, Jesus is all powerful, he's willing, and he's also able. That's different. People are willing. I appreciate it. Like Eric wants that. He said he wanted to pay for some stuff. We're like, you have a limited budget, I'm sure. I'm sure you do, right? We're like, let us take care of it. You know what I mean? You know, and I, like, even our kids, they want to help. People want to help. All around, you want to help, but sooner or later. But Jesus could do it all. Yeah. And I sit there and I said, you know, I hope as these people followed us for 32 years and 25 years, respectively, that they learned that somewhere along the line, no matter how many people come your way, Jesus will always be the one that will never fail you. And he proved it by dying. I mean, you know, you can take a joke only so far. You know, you can only take, like, I'm Lord so far. Because somebody presents you with the cross, you're like, okay, whoa, okay, no. You know what? The whole Messiah thing, sorry, I'm changing my mind, switching teams a little bit. But he took it all the way. And today's Resurrection Sunday, you know, basically, God in the Old Testament, a lot of times, he would come rescue right before the midnight hour. Yay! You know, the New Testament, God rescues at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, well after midnight. How do you rescue after someone's dead? Well, Jesus said, you can. And so anything that looks dead, God says, no, still, I'm still around. And so the amazing thing is, as we stood for our retirement, you know, and people laugh, are you really retiring? Well, we retired from that one job. But it was amazing just to see all these people, and I could not help to think of anything in me. If I followed me and I followed my ways and the rules that I set up, there's no way we would be on that stage. Moving forward, this is our family. This is our family. In the middle, there's centered from the ugly one to the left and right. That's me, okay? My wife's there. You can see her. But you can see on one side, there's Xander and Katrina. They got married in December, right? And they asked me to do the wedding. There was a moment. I was like, why? You know, because my parents had a broken marriage. How could I, and not just broken, it was broken, you know, it was really bad. You know, how do we build a marriage successfully? It's because somewhere along the line, I didn't follow their path. I couldn't have. I had to follow Jesus. So Eric and I built a marriage together and for something the kids want to follow. Amen. You know, always around your community, you always want to look ahead and say, is there somebody when I grow up, I want to be like that? When you don't have people like that, you probably don't want to do it, right? You know, if I see people going off the road and crashing into the cliff, I'm not going down that way. But I had no one to look to. There was no one to look to except the example of Jesus. And our son and daughter-in-law, wonderful disciples, said, will you please marry us? I'm like, amen. That's so wonderful. The wedding was so amazing. Tony and Melanie were there. Howard and Karen were there, of course, and Eric as well. But just standing there, how did this happen? And we go right back to, I followed Jesus. It's not meant to be, you know, it's not a benefit plan. Everybody gets it this way. But for me, we started well below zero. And on the other side, you have Gabriel and Inu. She's a great sister, too, from South Korea. He went to Korea, you know, got a T-shirt, and he got a wife, you know. Like, it was really all, I don't know. All I got is, this T-shirt from Korea. But he picked up this great sister. Amazing. They're getting married in October. And they said, you know, Dad, could you do the wedding? And I was like, do you know who you're asking to do this wedding? I know, I think we were pretty good parents, we tried our best, but still that deep narrative inside was like, do you know who you're asking? And I keep remembering, you're asking a man who follows Jesus. That's all that matters. In the end, you know, we I was looking at this. We call it the kingdom ever happily ever. You ever hear the stories of kingdom happily ever after? You know, you get the princess and the prince, and they're riding off into the sunset. Well, a lot of the archetype of what it means for the kingdom happily after is you have our children follow us as we follow Jesus. That's the dream. Yeah, but when you start thinking about the life that I lived and who I was, there's no way that dream would come true. I'm not saying this is the only dream. This is our kingdom happily ever after. Because not everything ends the way Disney, you know, Disney ends in every way. But in the kingdom, one of our dreams is to have their spouses and their children follow Jesus. That's what we want. That's our goal. Now, it doesn't always happen that way because our kids take their own path at times. We take our own paths. But in the end, what I'm hoping one day is that we all get to heaven for an endless fellowship. You know, I know Tony and Melanie's kids live all over the world and they fly around. We fly around back and forth and we want to see them. There'll be a time we don't need to do that. They'll be there. And the dream is to do that and to take many people as possible. And I remember this. I cannot have that dream happen if I don't follow Jesus. I don't follow Jesus, it's not going to happen for me. And as I go on with my lesson, this is something that really broke me in my heart when, in a good way, when our son and daughter-in-law, before the day before they got married, they gave us this picture. They had some artist put it together. And if you know, the tall one's him in the middle. And for somehow he got an idea of what our clothes would look like. And so the artist made this picture. And this picture was so cool. Basically, there's me and then there's my wife and he's holding us. And there's something that he says in here you may not be able to see, but it says, "Everything I am is because of you." And I was like, what? Do you know who you're talking to? Because of us? Because of me especially? You have no, do you know? They know our broken history. Because we've had to do a lot of healing with my family. I would not talk to my dad. There's no way I would talk to him if it wasn't for Jesus. Because the Bible talks about forgiveness. The Bible talks about loving your enemy no matter what. Because he has his own story too. And so at the end of the day, I looked at that and said, wow. You know, we really have influenced these people around us. You know, I think one of the things for us is like, I think we know we want to do that, especially like whether you're a disciple or not, somewhere you want to leave a legacy, something. You want to leave something good on earth. Even some of the people don't think that way. There's something broken. So even what you're doing, you think you're doing something right. And so as I think about scriptures here, I will follow you. Someone is following you. Didn't that scare you for a little bit? You don't have to have kids. In church, they're watching who you are. They are. Because they're actually seeing through every challenging thing. You know what they're really testing? Does your Christianity actually work when it gets troubled? Does it really work? Right? Does it really work? I used to love watching martial arts. And people go into the rings to start fighting. They'd be trained in black belt, triple dan, whatever. They got all these amazing skills. But when they get into the ring, you see who's really disciplined. It's because what happens is when they're not disciplined, they'll still fight like they've never trained. They're hitting each other, slapping each other. Like, what? You don't slap people. That's not a technique. But all those things, they lose all their training. And the thing about it is when I know someone is following me, I act different. I think different. So no matter what you say, someone's watching you at work. I know it sounds creepy, right? Someone's watching you. But they're watching to see if your Christianity works. What you say will work. In 1 Timothy 4:16, I've just got the scriptures for those who want to study it a little deeper. It talks about watching the way you live and watching what you say. It's almost better not to say it. Not that that's an option. I mean, as a disciple, you're saying that Jesus is my Lord. But do we act that way when the time comes? And I'll tell you, throughout my family and my history, I have not done that without but suddenly being reminded by people like Tony and Melanie. We're in a discipling relationship with them and the many other people in our lives helping us understand the incongruence between, hey, do you know someone's watching you? Do you ever get mad at one of your kids if you had the blessing of having kids? You get upset with them? Like, why are you like that? And you take a good look and say, you know what? I'm like that. And you get really, where'd you learn that from, right? And one of the greatest curses you can give your kids or blessing is like, I hope you have kids just like you. They have to do a little bit like, what? Is that a compliment? It all depends, right? I hope we have kids, I hope they act just like you. You're like, what's that all about? Another thing, understanding I will follow you, the crux of the message is that you're always following somebody. Yeah. whether you know it or not, you're following somebody. You have a mapping. You have a way of looking at the world that either you learned whether you wanted to learn or you didn't learn it the way you didn't want to learn it. But whatever it was, it has something to do with the way you set up your rules of life. One of my rules of life I had to break was I will not trust any human being because I've been burned, I've been hurt. But you can't trust people if you don't trust God, because God is in control of all things. Now, the irritating caveat to that is, just because God's in control doesn't mean bad things won't happen, because we choose bad things to happen. We create some of this evil ourselves. Because one of the greatest blessings from God is free will. Yeah. It's free will. You get to do what you want. Because here's the thing. If there's no free will, there is no love.
That's right.
There's no love, because if I can't choose to love God, then I'm a robot, right? I mean, there's like these new AI robots. You can program to say everything. Can you imagine having a robot come home? They're like, hey, Beulah, you're just awesome, right? You'll never believe them. It's because you program them to say it. It doesn't come from an autonomous state. And so we start thinking what it means for us to follow somebody. You're following somebody. I don't follow anybody. You do.
Yeah.
When you say that, there's 100 people that are unique saying the same thing about you. God, I don't follow anybody. I'm so unique. You're so unique. You're unique like everybody else is saying the same unique thing. So at the end of the day, disciples of Jesus, what we're supposed to be doing is we're supposed to make a commitment to follow Jesus. That's our commitment. I mean, no one would argue that if you're a disciple of Jesus, you follow Jesus.
Yes.
And that sacred vow that no matter what, I will follow you. See, the thing about that, though, is when I make that commitment, I can't see ahead. You know what I mean? I can't see ahead. And so what that means, I made a commitment to be a servant of Jesus Christ, all right? Minister actually means servant. It doesn't mean king, believe it or not. It means servant. Yep. And I'll tell you, one time I arranged an amazing banquet for our church. You know, that was a time where, you know, you were tone on tone. So, you know, you wore a suit and a blue tie, blue shirt. Everything's just blue, you know, walking around. And I remember, you know, I was helping the church out. We were doing great things. And this woman from another party came by. She handed me a cup with her finished Bloody Mary, said, here, take this. I was like, she thought it was a serving staff, right? I was like, hey, you know, here's the thing I learned. I love being a servant till you treat me like one.
Right.
Yeah, I was like, what the? I was like, I was like, what am I doing? Because I was so offended. She thought hey, you know who I am. I arranged that party. You know, what are you doing? You drunk lady. Like, that's what I was thinking in my head, right? But I was like, you know, it's great to want to follow Jesus until it happens that way.
Yes.
You know, it's all minor surgery, right? Until it's yours.
Yes.
Well, you're having minor surgery. Don't worry about it. Oh, you're having my, whoa. It's major. You cut stuff out of my body. It's huge. I don't even care if it's my baby toe. So when I think about it, I will follow you. Someone's following you. Someone's watching you. If you're single, you may think, well, I have nothing to do with the kid. They watch you. It's frightening what they see. Kids are incredible observers. They're terrible interpreters. They have no idea what you're doing, but they watch you, and they'll remember, oh, that guy was being unspiritual. They might remember it when they're 15 years old. You're like, how can they have such good memories? Think of all the stuff that you discovered maybe about your parents, about other people around when you turned like maybe 15, 16, if you're not as bright at 20, figured out like, well, oh, that's what they were doing. Oh, we had no money. Is that why? You know, whatever that was, why did we only get one Big Mac and split it four ways? Right? Maybe dad was like saying, well, I don't want to hurt your, you know, your heart and calories and cholesterol. Meanwhile, because you got no money. But you didn't realize that at the time. And so somewhere along the line, I will follow you has a lot to do with this mindset, thinking someone's watching me and following my example somewhere. Right?
Amen.
And I'm watching somebody following their example, and it sets in its rules. And you know what it becomes? It becomes normal.
Right.
You don't see normal. It's just normal. That's what it is. There'd be times you visit people's houses and say, why do you do things that way? And they're like, what way? I don't know what that is, right? Because it's the rules of their home, right? And it may be very different than yours. So when I think about the sacred vow, I will follow you, there was a guy, and just to tie it into Easter, Peter, the apostle. He was a guy that ran into stuff, always put his foot in his mouth. You know, I mean, yes, he walked on water, but he also sank in front of everybody. You know, he had the audacity to challenge Jesus. Hey, Jesus, You shouldn't go to Jerusalem. And then he was the only guy to be called Satan publicly, and now it's written forever. And you ever see, when you see Peter in heaven, hey, buddy, remember that one? Right? He's like, yeah, it's forever now. But Peter swore an oath that he would always follow Jesus, because everybody was at this gathering of the Last Supper that would have happened, you know, the Thursday or whatever it was, Friday, somewhere along the line. And Jesus said, y'all going to betray me. And Peter's like, you must be talking to those losers, because it's not me. And this is what Peter said. Even if I must die with you. I want you to think of that death oath, right? Even if I must die with you, I will not deny you. Flip that around. I will follow you wherever you go, Jesus, hell or high water. And all the disciples said the same. But it noted that he said it, probably first, and the loudest, beating his chest. No, you don't understand. Those guys, yes, they're total losers. I know I'm your favorite, whatever it is. In Matthew 26:35, it's a statement. Can you imagine being Peter right now? Even hearing the word, he just cringes. I mean, you can be forgiven, but still be embarrassed. You have that moment, your sins are forgiven, but you think back, like, oh, please, just take this out of my life, right? Well, Peter felt that way. And so you got to think, I make that commitment. Yeah. You make that commitment. Yeah. But then over time, like kind of Peter, we start to follow Jesus, kind of. You know what I mean? Like, I will follow you, but kind of. And what does that mean? Well, there's times we don't follow. And one of the first ways we don't do it, we just flat rebel. No, I'm not doing it. I don't care. I mean, you can look at the accompanying scriptures for deeper study. But think of a time when you know clearly, it's not because you don't know, you know clearly, and you do it anyway. It doesn't matter. Like wet paint, what's wrong with us? I don't know if it's wet. Ah, why is it wet? And you complain. But it said so, right? I remember, so funny, We love them so much, and I'm not even slandering, like 40 people were there inside. One little kid, we told him, don't touch the glass fireplace because it's really, really hot. It's really hot. He just looked at us, okay, I got it. What does he do? Goes and puts his hands against it. Well, his party ended that night, you know, and he left some, you know, fingerprints, like real fingerprints, like from his skin. And I was like, oh, no, I got to go scrape it off. I mean, my compassion was lacking. But I did tell him, right, don't do it. Well, he's full on rebellion. Well, and trip to the hospital. I still remember, hey, he doesn't go near fireplaces right now. There's some trauma left there. Whose fault was that, right? It was his fault. And I'm not shaming him. A little bit I am. But at the end of the day, don't we do that when God says, please don't do that? It's not even an edge. It's like, don't do that. You're like, sure, whatever. And I will follow you, Jesus, except for this part. I will rebel. When you rebel, it doesn't go well. Whether it doesn't go well right away or later on, you usually catch it and go, oh no, that was stupid. It's because God told me directly, please don't do that. Now, there's another layer of I will follow you kind of is we negotiate. You know, we negotiate. You know, God, I mean, you know, I get it. You say that, but you know, I think you don't understand me. These scriptures, if I just move the word here and there, shift it in there, I'm going to negotiate a new deal with you, God. And all of a sudden, we do what we call Bible gymnastics. There's ways diving around the scriptures, moving around them. But meanwhile, the scriptures clearly say don't do that. So we shouldn't lie. It doesn't say we shouldn't. We are commanded not to lie. Okay? But then the white lie shows up. What's a white lie? Well, you know, it's a lie. It doesn't harm anybody, whatever it may be. You start calling. You know, we call it ishing things. You know, 4 o'clock, $400, 400-ish. So we ish the scriptures a little bit, and we call it following Jesus. It ain't following Jesus. You're ishing the whole thing now. You know, taxes are coming up, right? Why don't you try that? See how it goes. How much you make this year? 40-ish? 1,000? 40-ish? I think you're going to get a call. They're like, you know, I'm sorry. This ish doesn't work. With God, there are some very exacting things because He made us. He made us. It's not like an oil change. It's suggested you change it at this time. Over time, your car doesn't work and you start blaming other people. What's up with that? Or maybe over time, I will follow you, kind of, means we just kind of forget. We forget. Do you ever just forget because there's a shift in your life? I remember when I first got married, you know, I mean, once I became a disciple, I wasn't sexually active anymore. And so it was almost 3 years for me. And so when I woke up beside Erica the first night, I was like, ah! I just jumped out. I was like, oh my gosh, what's happening? And then the moment I realized I was married, but it had only been 24 hours. I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna die, right? Like, what's happening to me? Because I forgot, even though there was a big thing, very expensive, but it hadn't taken in yet for a while, right? But I'll tell you, over time though, even though I've been married 30 years, you also kind of forget that you're married. You go, oh yeah, I'm married, I forgot about that. Well, it's kind of, I will follow you, kind of, oh yeah, I remember, I'm a Christian, I forgot about that. I'll tell you, we can judge ourselves pretty quickly as human beings and say, well, how can we forget about stuff? How can we lose our minds like that? Well, when we get scared, that's what happens. And as enlightened as we are, you know, Ottawa, a refined city of politicians and intellectuals and stuff like that, Canada, we're so enlightened, we accept things, diversity, equity, inclusion. Let me ask you, 4 years ago, what was the most sought-after thing in Canada? Yes, right, toilet paper. Because that makes sense, right? Not hoarding food, gold, even guns or whatever you want to call it. But toilet paper. Why toilet paper? I mean, you can always shower unless you've got a medical problem. I mean, what did they do before toilet paper? There's leaves, you know, whatever. But why toilet paper? Do you know, I don't know about here, but in Winnipeg, in the history of Costco, never had a secure guard in front of anything except the front doors. Not the diamonds and watches and stuff like that. There was a security guard in front of the toilet paper. You're like, get out of here. I know. I know. And you know what? Just before you get super judgy here, maybe you're going by, you know, driving by. I'm not going to follow this nonsense. I'm a Christian. And you see some guy go by with, you know, a lot of rolls. You're like, maybe I'll just get a couple extra rolls just in case. They were selling them on Amazon for $40 a roll. And they were running out. What does it tell you about human beings? No, Dave, that's so long ago. Really? You probably know people that are still using toilet paper from back then because they bought so much. So as noble as we think we are, go back to that. I think some guy down in Georgia pulled out a gun on a guy to get his toilet paper. Can you imagine facing judgment by God? How did you die? I died for 2-ply. I mean, can you imagine? That sounds so ridiculous, but that was us. They didn't have that problem in India or Africa, just in North America. Because we think we're all that, you know, like, not that, people laughed at us. If you want to know the origin of that, supposedly there was a shortage in Australia. That totally affects us in Winnipeg. No, it does not. It's a frenzy. When people get scared, they forget about sanity, right? And so when you say, I will follow you, there are moments like, boom, you get scared, and you're like, ah, and you go all full on non-Christian. That's not following Jesus. That means it's not taken in so deeply. And I've had those moments, believe me. A lot of those moments where my story is, oh, I don't trust people again. Oh, you can't trust people. That will include my wife, even my kids. Because that thing is a curse. But only Jesus can fix it if you follow him.
That's right.
What else? We start noticing when we're not following Jesus, you kind of know it. You're not growing as a person. Think of the interesting things that happen perhaps in your career, in your life. You're slowly evolving your career. Okay. You may shift jobs. You're making more money. You're leading more people. Everything's great. But if you looked at the same trajectory for your Christianity, it's the same year after year. You're not impacting any more people than you were before. You know the John 3:16, you know, just like the 4 or 5 scriptures. I mean, you can wax eloquent about those things, but you heard it from someone else when they studied the Bible with you. A lot of times, the deepest Bible studies that we've had for recent times is when you study the Bible with someone. No, JK, I mean, I hope that the deepest Bible studies that you have will always be deeper and deeper. So 30 years from now, I don't think I'll be around, but 30 years from now, I hope that she can say, you know, I've had deeper quiet times every year because I'm evolving, I'm growing. And the only way to do that is following Jesus. If you don't follow Jesus, it shows over time. You're just not growing as a person. You're just not as a spiritual person. And the thing about it is, everything else is growing, just not that. Like, why is that? I mean, can you imagine going to the gym and only working out your right leg? It would look funny. Yeah. Now, I've seen people like that, those big arm wrestling competitions. Their arms are huge, but they get these chicken legs. You just kick them down, you know, knock them down, that's it, right? That would look weird, but they have a very specific purpose. And so as we think about what this means for us, we don't grow, and we see it. Over time, you know what happens? And you can look at the scriptures for this as well. it gets exposed. It gets exposed. The closer you get to God, the longer you've been around, you can fake it until you try to make it, but if you don't follow Jesus, it's not going to make it. This Easter reminds us that you can. Jesus was so committed that he would die for you before you even knew him, even when we're rebelling, even when we're renegotiating terms, even though we're forgetting, even though we're not growing. Jesus says, look, I'm going to expose you for good reason. So here's Peter making the vow. And then this is what happens. Then Peter remembered, this is after Jesus was arrested, he was being pulled up by the Roman soldiers. And then Peter remembered the words Jesus had spoken. Before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. You know, he figured it out. Oh no, I swore I would follow him. But you know what, when whatever came my way, he denied him in front of these servant girls. And the Bible says, and he went outside and he wept bitterly. Compare the response. A Judas also betrayed him. He went out and felt remorse. But there were two completely different endings for these men. Because the most famous traitor that we know is Judas. Anybody name their kid Judas? Right? No. But Peter was also a betrayer. Except his story at the end changed. So there's kids named Peter. You still name your kids Peter, and it's not Judas. Any Jezebels kicking around? No way, right? Because these are names like no. And you get some heavy metal bands, and some people want to be anti-social name than that. But we already know. They're just trying to be cool, but they're not. They're just, as we think about, these names have resonated with people as people that are traitorous. But Peter's name, it could have stayed that way. But the amazing things, when we start thinking about maybe some signs and symptoms that we're starting to follow Jesus ish. You know, I like charts. It's part of what I do. And so there's something that you might enjoy seeing. So on one axis, you have this important, you don't have to, I can send you the PowerPoint, you can just watch this. On one side of the axis, you see something that's important. And on the top axis, you see something you want to do. Here's one of the big signs you're doing well spiritually. Important spiritual things you want to do. That's the check mark. That's what you want to be, right? But here's when red flags start coming up. Important spiritual things that you committed to before, you suddenly don't want to do. Why is that? It's not that the gospel changed. Not that my commitment changed. Somewhere, something changed in my heart. Right. And I have to start figuring that out, because slowly you start moving off the line, and that becomes a new normal. Now, you have some things that are not so important spiritually, but you want to do. Well, that's part of escape behavior. Right. I would rather just not face this. I'm going to go do something else, and we'll talk about what that looks like. But look at the guy trying to run out the side. He's trying to escape this conversation. Some of you right now are feeling quite uncomfortable. Like, that chart's really nailing me. I don't know what to do with that. But it's all tied into Scripture. Right. You've lost your first love. Now, the Bible talks also a little bit about people who just fall asleep. Yeah. Things that are not important, they don't want to do, they don't even notice it because you're just asleep spiritually. Right. Sunday, Christian, get here, yay, hallelujah, praise you, all the stuff, you do in the French versions of whatever, do whatever, and you go home, and then the minute 12:01, 12:30 hits or whatever, that's it, you're done. Yeah. We call that the spiritual jacuzzi experience. What do I mean by that? If you're injured, jump in a hot tub, it feels okay. You come out, the tendon's still ripped, right? But it feels good as long as you're in that jacuzzi. You come back out, it doesn't take very long, right? And for us, church can be that spiritual jacuzzi, but you're not really dealing with the wound. It just feels okay for a little bit. Because all this stuff is really warm, you know, there's a lot of bubbles everywhere, a little music, you know. But it doesn't really help. Because in the long run, we're asleep spiritually. So as we start thinking what this means for us, you know, you can always take a look. What are some important spiritual things that suddenly I don't want to do anymore? Why is that? Because I'm starting to follow ish a little bit. So you start thinking about Christianity, it literally looks like this every single day. I will follow or I will not. You're like, what? That's how simple it is? I know, because if Jesus made it complicated, what would I do? I'm not the brightest light in the harbor. For me, as I realize, okay, when you're confronted by the Word of God, you either do it or you don't. That's it. That's as simple as it is. All through the Bible, there's all these dual things. Mountain of life, mountain of death. Mountain of curses, mountain of blessing. You see how simple that is? Right? Follow God or, and everything else is an or, right?
That's right.
It's just as simple as that. Now, of course, we add theology, and I've been trained in homiletics and all that, but it still boils down after the big degree, is that, are you going to do what Jesus says?
Right.
Yeah, but I know a lot about it. Good for you. Are you going to do it? Because I'll tell you, I know a lot about feeding those who are experiencing homelessness. I can think about it. I can get emotional about it. I can feel really strongly. But in the end, if I don't hand out that bologna sandwich, you know what happens? They're still hungry.
That's right.
Christianity, there's a sandwich element to it, if you know what I mean. I got to hand it out. And so as I started looking, what's the fruit in my life? We realized that Peter somewhere made a bad choice. But somewhere he went and made the good choice again, or you wouldn't have the books of 1 Peter. You wouldn't have that because he made that. I'll tell you, one of these famous scriptures, if you start studying a little more, it's about leaving God and stopping following. And I'm wondering if Peter had this in mind, him leaving God for those moments, when he wrote this passage about those who have decided to follow Jesus, the great resurrection, the person who's promising resurrection for us. And the minute you decide, I'm not going to follow him anymore, and it becomes a pattern, I wonder if what was going through his mind when he penned these words. It would have been better for them to not have known the way of righteousness than to have known it and then turned their backs on the sacred command that was passed on to them. Of them, the Proverbs are true. A dog returns to its vomit, and a sow that is washed goes back to their wallowing in the mud. That's 2 Peter chapter 2. He wrote that. What do you think he was thinking of? I'm guessing he was thinking about that time I turned back and I decided to go the other way because it cost too much. You know, we had two dogs. We loved our dogs. Not the second one so much, but it's okay. We got the second one to help the first one be friendly. It just did not work out. The second dog, he had anxiety. They had all kinds of stuff going on with him. And he had some strange desires, this dog. And I remember taking him out for a walk, and you know, he had to do that because the whole bathroom thing. And so for us, there was all these little voles. They're like little mice that run around outside. And sometimes he'd get smooshed or get squashed. And I remember him going out, whatever. And there was a dead one out there. And he went and grabbed one in his mouth. And I was like, hey, no way it's going to happen. So I smacked it out of his mouth. And the vole, I just kicked it. You know, it was all winter and all frozen. I just kicked it over by a tree. I just left it. Okay? It was like, ew, you know, Shadow, what are you doing? Bad dog, right? Don't do that. Because you're going to lick my face with a dead. Nah, man, that's not going to happen, right? You know what I'm talking, dog owners. You know, think about it. Of course, I didn't tell Erica about the vole. She's not really into dead mice and stuff, right? I didn't tell her. You know what happened? She took him out for a walk. Like, we're talking a week later. He pulls her to that tree, doesn't know. Then he just eats it and swallows it. And she just totally lost it. You know what the crazy thing was? That dog was probably thinking about that dead mouse the whole week. I just can't wait to get back to eating that mouse. We kept him in his kennel a whole week. I was waiting for it. And it finally, you know, I was like, okay. And you know what? I'll tell you, I never understood that passage. That thing was thinking about that the whole week long. Just, I can't wait to go outside. I can't wait to go outside. Because I'm going after that. And I said, oh, my goodness. So next time I see one of those, I put it so far away. There's no way, right? Can you imagine being that guy? I love my life so much from before. I just can't wait. Right? It's a dead mouse you're waiting to eat. That's what Peter's saying. This is so gross. Why would we do that? But all of a sudden, can you imagine it start changing the way we looked at? But of course, we know that Peter repented of that. Because it'd be weird to write this. I'm falling away. I'm going to leave something special for everyone so I can condemn myself with my words, right? But we know as we go on to the story, and some of this involves a little study in your own, we know that he changed. If you looked at Matthew chapter 26, read the story on your own, he ended up following Jesus again,
yes.
Right? And remember, he swore this oath to Jesus, but he ran away, he denied Jesus 3 times, but what shifted in him? There wasn't like this big moment he had to talk in Jesus, because he didn't. Jesus was dead, he was resurrected, and it was an amazing story of how Peter changed. But I looked a little further back, and this is not something that you could do it in one sitting, you could, but to consider. Because sometimes somebody's whole life story, tells you a little bit more about who they are rather than just one incident. And so one thing I want to invite you to do is to think back of an amazing story where it was called the miraculous catch of fish. There were 2 of them. There's one miraculous catch of fish that involved Peter pre-crucifixion, and there's one post-crucifixion. And anybody who'd read the Bible, it would be eerily similar, except for one thing. And so I want to share the story with you. I'm not going to read it all. I want you to read it at home, in Luke chapter 5, verse 1 to 11. But I'll tell you this about this story. Pre-crucifixion, this happened. The apostles were fishing, and they caught nothing all night. And that's really irritating, because I'm an avid fisherman. I hate sitting there and just not catching anything. You know, I just go and do a fish and chip place after just to, you know, get the fish back, if you know what I mean. I just enjoy it. They were fishing. They caught nothing all night. And, of course, there's a whole metaphor about the futility of just doing things without Jesus. Then Jesus, he met them, and he asked them, hey, would you put your nets out again? And some sarcastic comments go, okay, carpenter. We're professional fishermen. And, of course, you don't do that to Jesus, because he will make sure you pay for it. And they caught so many fish that other fishermen would, like, they were freaking out. But after that miraculous catch, Peter realized something. He'd been with Jesus for years. He never saw Jesus in that moment, in that light before. And he totally freaked out, because he couldn't believe something he was supposed to be good at, Jesus was better at, just with a command. And he just said, I don't think so. I don't believe you, Jesus. There's no way. I mean, I appreciate you do all the spiritual stuff, you know, heaven, hell, talk about it. But fishing, come on, that's practical stuff. You can't do that. And when Jesus did what he did, it blew Peter away. To the point, even while Peter was in shock, I'll show that in a second, he was told, don't be afraid. You're going to catch men like this one day. I don't think you heard anything. Because this is what happened. When Simon Peter saw this, he saw the catch of fish. The Bible says he fell at Jesus' knees and he said, go away from me. I'm a sinful man. And that's significant. Because he'd been Old Testament Jew. Whenever you're unholy, you run away from God. That's just the way it was. You don't go to the mountain or you just get blown up unless you're holy. Peter saw his lack of holiness. He saw his faithlessness. And his response was to run away. I want you to think about what that can mean for us. When you look at his response, he saw this glory. And as a fisherman, I probably would have ran toward the fish. Like, whoa, this is awesome. It wasn't just a sport fishing event. It was their income, too. He imagined landing on a jackpot of $1 million. I mean, but his first thought was to look to himself, and he realized how dirty he was. And he said to Jesus, go away from me. Push away from me. And he does not grasp the mission that Jesus gave him. He probably heard, blah, 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 blah. That's all he heard. Because you're freaking out in your mind. And so why is this response so interesting? Because when you're not following Jesus, and Peter was with Jesus and all that, but his heart wasn't fully committed. You can start seeing it, because he starts to see Jesus again and again very differently. And so I think for us, when I'm not following, there's some things that we start to do as a Christian. I start to deny. I may start to deny. I am following him. And we get defensive. But over time, you start to see when you're not following Jesus, you know, in some terms, we call it disassociation. It's a big term. It means escape behavior. You start buying stuff, playing video games, start getting to sinful internet behavior. You start to workaholic, whatever it is. When you stop following Jesus, you might start denying his existence without really going, I deny Jesus. But the very life that we live, it's more interesting to go play a video game than read your Bible. It's more interesting to talk about the weather and jobs and all the cool things that are going on, how the Senators beat the Chicago Blackhawks the other day, way more than anything about what's going on in my life. So in many ways, I'm in a denial state. Now, let's say somebody were to point out to you, you know, bro, sister, you're not doing so great. Yeah, I know, we're all sinners, and we minimize that. You know, we call that fragmentation in some ways, because you know what happens? When I see the whole story, it's devastating. But it's easy to fragment bits of the story. Yeah, I'm not doing well here, but if I were to write down the whole story of my week, then it shows how bad it is. And so we're really good at disassociating and escaping. Yeah. Why do you think Netflix made so much money? During the pandemic, I don't know if you noticed, but everything shut down except the cannabis store, the liquor store, and Netflix. Why is that? Because the country would blow up, or maybe find Jesus, like one or the other. And in the long run, we deny where we're at spiritually. We minimize. If somebody were to show us that, say, hey, you know, like, no, I'm okay here, but I'm okay here, and I'm okay here, without realizing, what about the whole picture? Right? Because even if you look at someone ridden with cancer, you can find one spot. If they did a micro zoom in, they're looking fine. But if you look at the whole self, you're like, wait a minute, your cancer's up here, your cancer's up here. Well, there's points in time where maybe I can't deny and I can't minimize anymore. Then I blame others. It's this church. It's the people. This is economy. There's something going on. And maybe over time, I start to isolate myself from people spiritually. People don't know me anymore. Oh man, I'm up here singing my songs, I'm doing my thing. There's no way you're gonna catch me. Because honestly, over the many years, I'm pretty good at being a Christian, looking like a Christian. Especially as a minister, I can get all spiritual. You have no clue what's going on. You know the crazy thing about it? Judas, no one could tell who he was. Even the last day, even when Jesus makes it obvious, the one I dipped my bread into the bowl, the one. Everyone's like, who? Even Judas is like, oh, wow, you know, I'm going to get caught now. Nobody. Because they already had a narrative. Judas is one of the boys. He's one of us. There's no way. I mean, surely Jesus is joking. Can you imagine being so deep into that hood that no one can see who you are? Wow. There's no way. Well, can you imagine being so deep that here we are and we're not following Jesus? We're fragmenting everywhere, telling different pieces of story. Here's a little bit of my story. You think I'm awesome. Here's a bit of my story. If I tell you the whole story, all of a sudden you're like, wait. It's like, David, you know, where'd you get that car? Oh, I found it. Oh, you found it? Amazing. Well, I did find it in the dealership. I had to break the door and get a key. Like that whole story. Go, wait a minute. You stole the car. No. Let's not be judgy here, right? And so as we start thinking what this means, I'm falling, maybe there's a symptom of some of that. Because what that does is we don't turn to Jesus. We're turning to other things. We're minimizing. We're turning to little bits of the story that favor us. And we're also blaming other people. It's everyone else's fault but mine, where I'm spiritual. Look, when Israel had no king in the book of Judges, people did as they pleased. But doesn't that assume good people did as what they pleased and evil people did what they pleased? Because they always had a king. It was God. And so as we think about following Jesus, does it matter how everyone else is doing? Because I'm following Jesus no matter what. As we move on, here's something interesting about Peter. If you look at John 21, verse 3 to 14, this is the continuation of the story. And I don't think it was an accident. I think the writers put it together too as a parallel. But this event, if you read it, this is happening after Jesus resurrected. The apostles went fishing. And they caught nothing all night. Similar. Jesus came up, showed up. They kind of knew who he was. They're like, oh no. Can you imagine the smart ones figuring this out? This feels eerily familiar. And Jesus says, hey, why don't you put the nets out? And there's no argument this time. Sure, we'll take it out. Another miraculous catch of fish. Can you imagine deja vu freaking them out? And all of a sudden, Peter had to respond because everyone's like, it's Jesus. We've been here before. We've seen this movie. Remember how Peter responded last time? Away from me. Remember what Peter, I don't know what he was thinking back then as a sinful fisherman, but what's he thinking now, do you think? He had now added a little extra hot sauce to his sin. Can you imagine now being the one that betrayed the Son of God? Would you think he would run right at Jesus? More like, oh no, I got to run even farther away now. He had more reason to run away. And somehow Jesus gives him the commission. You don't just catch men now. You're going to feed them. Maybe there's something to do with, unless you're changed, Peter, you're not going to feed people properly. You might catch a bunch of them, but you're not going to help them grow if you stay the way you are. So here's Peter. As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, it is the Lord, he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the water. So instead of running away from Jesus, he ran straight at him in the water. He didn't care about the fish, he didn't care about anything else. He didn't care about his own sin. What do you see? Same story, different response. Do you think that was a fluke? I don't think so. There's a parallelism that Jesus, as the writers write, to show us. Same guy. Actually, not even the same guy. A worse guy, if you think about it, right? As we go forward, Peter's response was he saw once again this glory of God, right? And he was even more sinful, as I described before, more if you know what I mean. And what he did, he ran and he ignored everything else. Can you imagine this Peter? He's suddenly given this commission now, and Jesus explicitly explains to him, feed my lambs, feed my sheep, feed my lambs, because he was ready to hear it. Because I'll tell you what the difference was. When he saw who he was, Instead of getting away from Jesus, getting away, you know what he did? He followed instead. I'm wondering what the parallel for us in our lives is. So here's another chart. I like these charts for you to think about. To reprioritize what this looks like, think about all the important things spiritually, urgent things that are spiritual right now, today, that you got to do. Got to stay in that check mark. There are urgent things we need to do spiritually right now. Maybe you need to get something off your chest today. Yeah, but I got this ham roasting. The ham can wait. I'm not saying let it burn, but you can do both.
Yeah.
There's some things in this Resurrection Sunday. Got to get help. You got to get deal with right now. Yeah. If you don't. No, it'll wait after the yams. And, you know, there's a certain way. Like, I get it, right? But you know what? If it's urgent and important spiritually, you're going to drop everything just to take care of it. Like your nets, like everything. Doesn't matter. But David, it's been so long since I opened my heart to somebody. Yeah, I know. That's why it's urgent and important that you need to do it. Now, you might have some things that are really urgent, important spiritually, but not urgent because you can take care of it, but you got to take care of it later on, maybe later this week, because it's just kind of weird. Hey, you know, Melanie, can you stop the turkey? Because I got to talk about some stuff.
Yeah.
But I got to, that's insensitive, okay? But that may involve, but you notice, focus on the important things. What I don't want to do today is those things that are not important spiritually, that are urgent, like I got to check my Facebook because people are dinging me and, you know, they're showing all their, you know, their Easter foods and stuff. You know, people need to do that. I need to get back to them because, you know, I won't get enough likes or whatever. That's not important right now. What else? Things that are not important, not urgent. We end up doing some of those things because, once again, we want to escape.
Right
now, we have a lot of irritated people in the room right now. If you're spiritual, you'd be like, ooh, I don't like that because I got a lot of stuff in the non-urgent, non-important stuff I'm just going to do. But meanwhile, because I'm ignoring the big green check mark I need to take care of. As Peter was the example for us of following Jesus, it was just a slight shift. Instead of pushing Jesus away when he was in sin up to his eyeballs, he embraced Jesus when he was in a worse state. The amazing thing, as we kind of close for resurrection, is that God can resurrect the dead.
Amen.
You're still alive. I don't care where you're at. You're not dead. Believe me, when you're dead, there's judgment and there's no chance. I'll tell you, there are a lot of weird sayings out there. YOLO is definitely one of them. You only live once, right? Well, you do. But you don't come back. You live and you face judgment for God. Because as I look at Easter, look at what Jesus got punished for. It's for us. He wouldn't die if nobody got punished. So as we think about what's your next step, I think one of the simple things is to acknowledge you need help to find out more about Jesus, whether you're a disciple or not. You need help. Tony is one of those guys that helped me long ago. But there's some things we need to learn as disciples, but there's some things we need to unlearn as disciples too. When was the last time someone changed your mind about your spiritual life? Just changed your mind. That you're going this way, thought it was all that, I thought it was following, but changed your mind. Find someone who's trusted spiritually, but also they're competent. They know what they're talking about. Because there's a lot of people I like, I trust them, but they don't know what they're talking about when it comes to certain areas. I love certain brothers. They're not going to change my brakes because my whole family is going to end up seeing Jesus like right away. I want to find someone who knows what they're talking about. And last but not least, something I encourage you to do every day this month is to declare in your quiet time, in your prayer, I will follow you. I will follow you. So thank you so much, Tony and Melanie. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for taking the time, and happy Easter and Resurrection Day.